The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I'm delighted to be joined now by Sean Spicer, who's the former US government press secretary during Donald Trump's first term in office. Before we get into things like tariffs and Elon Musk and so much more, Sean, can I first talk to you about St. Patrick's Day?
First of all, Kieran, you can definitely talk to me about that. I feel like I've got my, I didn't even plan this, but I got a little bit of green there for you.
Oh yeah, I see that. That's nice in the video. People at home can't see that. I could see that. That's nice. We've got that bit of green. So listen, there'll be a bowl of green handed over from Micheál Martin to Donald Trump on St. Patrick's Day, or close to it anyway. And there's this kind of schools of thought in Ireland that the opportunity, well, there's people who say we shouldn't go at all, we should boycott it. And then there's people who say we should go and we should wag the finger and admonish Donald Trump for his approach to Gaza. And others who say we should use the opportunity to lobby for kind of a more preferential treatment of Ireland with regard to kind of possible trade wars and tariffs. What would your advice be to Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, how to approach that meeting?
I would go with option four, which is seize this opportunity to continue to highlight and honor the unbelievable bond that the Irish people and the American people have. If you go with options one through three, you're going to undermine years of goodwill. I think that one through three would be unbelievably foolish and short-sighted. Ireland punches above their weight. When they come over for St. Patrick's Day, the red carpet, frankly, the green carpet gets rolled out for them. They meet with the president, the national security advisor, members of Congress. There's an entire lunch dedicated to that. Now, Kieran, just to give you some context, there's no other country in the world that gets this kind of treatment. None. No one that has an annual event where the entire government of the United States pauses to honor the special relationship between the two countries and the two cultures and the two peoples. So the idea that the Taoiseach would think that it would be a good idea to reprimand the president of the United States on issues of policy, he obviously, you know, look, we've got the right of free speech in our country. He has absolutely the right to go do that. But I would hesitate to say that that might be the last time that that celebration occurs if he chooses to go down that path.
You think that would be the consequence if he went in? Look, I suspect he will be under pressure domestically to say something or to be seen to say something. How would Donald Trump react if he goes with options two or three? Finger wag about Gaza or implore preferential treatment for Ireland?
Well, number one, I think Donald Trump will, you know, he can handle any situation. So he'll handle it fine in the moment. But the long-term consequences, I find it extraordinarily undiplomatic to come over using the situation and the pretense of a celebration of the two cultures to come over and use this as an opportunity to lecture us. I personally, as an Irish American, would be offended and would highly recommend that the president cease to do this going forward. So it will cut off, I will leave it at this. I think it would be unbelievably short-sighted and there would be long-term ramifications if the Taoiseach chooses to use this moment to advance a personal, political, ideological view than to appreciate the moment that exists. And he will have no one to blame but himself if he chooses to do that. Now, again, in the moment, it might be fine. There are ways that I think you can express your issues on policy issues. But I don't think that the irony of this, by the way, Kieran, is you're going to use this moment, if for example, on Gaza, to lecture the United States on an issue that's not germane to the bilateral relationship that we enjoy. You want to weigh in on how another country's being treated? Really? You want to lecture? I can't think of a more short-sighted way to screw up a decades-long tradition that has come to captivate the entire country here. And he will have no one to blame but himself should he choose that path.
Well, let's imagine kind of trade and tariffs do get talked about. They will get talked about in some sense, you know, because that is germane to the bilateral relationship.
Absolutely.
Between those countries. And I guess what policymakers and politicians and the public on this side of the pond are trying to work out is, you know, what does Donald Trump really want when it comes to talk of of tariffs? Because sometimes, as you know, you've worked with the man, you know the man. He says he wants something because he wants something else. It's the art of the deal going on. Sometimes he says he wants it because he actually wants it, you know? So, you know, he wanted something else maybe from Canada and Mexico, agreements around border security and maybe a more favourable reinterpretation of NAFTA when that comes up for renewal, that free trade agreement. And people here now are wondering, the talk of tariffs and a potential trade war between the European Union and the US, what's Donald Trump's endgame? What's he hoping to get to?
In this case, I think it's unbelievably simple. He's communicated that and telegraphed it. He wants reciprocity. So on issues of tariff and non-tariff barriers, he's looking industry by industry and figuring out whether or not the United States is getting a good deal or not. So, you know, whether it's auto sector or financial services, he's trying to figure out whether or not the market access that we get is equivalent to the market access that other countries are getting to the United States. And if not, then he wants equivalency.
But say you look at the pharmaceutical sector then in an Irish context, because what he also talks about is trade deficits. You know, he takes that into account in all of this. And I mean, you could afford the US the same access to kind of the Irish market for pharmaceuticals as we get into the US market. There'd still be a trade deficit because we're selling into a market of kind of 300 million plus, and you'd only be selling into a market of 5 million people. It's hard to see how, from kind of an Irish point of view, we can circle that square.
Well, I think that you're bringing up a second point. I think in many cases, like let's say that in the case of autos into the EU more particularly, there is a difference between a small, I mean, like, I don't think that anybody believes that you can solve the trade deficit between a smaller country like Ireland and a larger market like the United States. But I think he can look at it and say, do we have a fair shot at your market? And whether it's tariff or non-tariff barriers that are creating that barrier, once that's eliminated, I don't think that he's going to say, hey, if we eliminate that barrier and there's still a trade deficit, then we have to eliminate it. He understands the sheer size of the two countries. So I think that's very different than looking at something, for example, like the auto sector when it comes to our market access issues into greater Europe.
So how do you suspect it's going to, you know, play out? Because there are kind of, and it's not just inane kind of Twitter posts wherein this is being discussed, at fairly high levels within Europe and in Brussels, there's conversations now in the context of all of these tariffs and potential trade wars of deleveraging the United States or Europe from the US and kind of a decoupling, as it were, which would be a kind of a remarkable change in a relationship that has endured since the end of the Second World War. What's your interpretation of that, or kind of maybe whether you share any of those fears?
Can you kind of expand on that? Fears of what?
I guess the fears that we would have in Europe, maybe you don't have them, but the fears that that relationship might break down, it might not exist way. And as a consequence of that, I guess the fear that some might have is that Europe then kind of, instead of standing on its own two feet, instead becomes enthralled to China rather than the US or something like that.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk, and the word relationship has gotten thrown a lot, both in the European media and here at home. And I find it funny, for literally decades, we want to talk about the friendship and the relationship between the sort of the greater European bloc and the United States. We've given Europe unbelievable market access. We've supported the national defenses of Europe in countless ways. And I'm not saying it's a one-way street. Please don't take that away. Like, I get there's been contributions from many European militaries, in particular in our war in Afghanistan and against 9/11, in our response on 9/11. But both militarily and economically, two friends don't take advantage of each other the way that we've been taken advantage of by Europe writ large. And so for Donald Trump to stand up and say, you know, it's about time that if we're such good friends, if we've got such a close relationship, maybe it's time that we actually talked about how that relationship is, you know, exists and is composed. And there should be some degree of fairness. But if you continue to take advantage of us over and over again, then you're not really that good of a friend. And I think that's the context of this. Europe's idea of a relationship is you'll take care of us, you'll shoulder the burden, and we'll be friends. That's not a great friendship. That's a, you know, that's not how friends treat each other.
Yeah, but there was a value in that relationship as well, abstract and all as it might be, in the sense that Europe was within the US sphere of influence, as it were.
Yeah, so
and that a breakdown and you know, setting aside all the trade issues and kind of, you know, how easy it is to sell German cars in the US compared to selling US cars in Germany. Set all that aside, if the relationship breaks down, then Europe no longer being within the US sphere of influence, like, that's a bad thing for America, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's also a bad thing for Europe. It's a bad thing for Germany, to your example. Look, at the end of the day, Germany being stronger is good for Germany. Germany being stronger is good for the US. Germany being stronger is good for world safety. So part of this is some tough love, is saying it's time that you guys actually learn to stand on your own two feet. Yes, we can be friends. Yes, we can be allies. But at the end of the day, if that's the choice, if all you are is a cheap date that will sell out to China, then that really doesn't say much about your values, does it?
Well, actually, can I ask you about Germany? And if people are just joining us, Sean Spicer is with me here on the Hard Shoulder, former White House Press Secretary. There's kind of a sense of resentment, maybe certainly within Germany, about Elon Musk posting things online like, you know, the AfD is the only solution to the kind of political crisis in Germany, or whatever he happened to say. That's a slight kind of paraphrasing of it. What do you make of how Elon Musk is settling into his role and the influence he has?
Well, I think there's two separate things that you're bringing up. One is the posts and the issues that he has, you know, internationally, whether it's Germany or some of the issues with Starmer, the prime minister there in the UK, and what he's doing here in the US. He's obviously doing a lot with this, they call it DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, looking at the waste, fraud, abuses, inefficiencies that have existed for decades in our own government. I think that's largely being applauded by people of both parties. There are obviously some detractors who I find fascinating that you would stand there and say, after being presented with just indefensible waste in our government, inefficiencies, unacceptable accounting practices, et cetera, that people would defend that. But, you know, they have a right to do it. I think that it's great that we're exposing this. Taxpayers in the United States work very hard to support our government. And the idea that billions and billions of dollars are being thrown out the window needlessly when we have several things that we should fund. We're $36 trillion in debt. We're $2 trillion a year in deficit spending. So as a taxpayer myself, I'm excited about what he's done. I applaud his efforts. And again, I think there's a whole separate issue of his personal grievances internationally.
What do you think the AfD is the only solution for Germany?
Look, I'm not well versed enough at this point to get into Germany's internal politics. I'll leave Elon's to defend Elon's discussion.
Within DOGE, to what extent is it? I guess, look, it's the same. Anybody does this in any job, he's going after the low-hanging fruit first, and USAID or USAID.
Can I just say this, yeah. Kieran? That comment, I know you were getting to a greater point, so I'm not trying to make this about you. But in the U.S., so many journalists say that, oh, it's just low-hanging fruit. It's only $10 million. It's only $20 million. It's only $53 million. It's a drop in the bucket compared to our overall budget. How insulting and disrespectful is that? Do you know how many hardworking Americans are working two jobs just to get by and have to pay a tax bill that maybe an extra $100, $500 would make a big difference to their lives? The idea that journalists in this country and folks on the left are saying it's only fill in the blank,
yeah,
is so utterly disrespectful.
Well, I don't know what people in the States meant, kind of journalists, but what I meant by low-hanging fruit was kind of in terms of what's politically palatable to people. So it's easy to cut USAID. It doesn't affect really anyone in the States. What the question I was going to ask is, and forget the sums of money involved, how difficult does the job become when he gets involved with kind of Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, stuff that kind of DOD. People actually rely on?
I hope when he goes to the Department of Defense, the Department of Defense in the United States hasn't passed an audit in 8 years. I hope to God he goes through there. I want him to go. Look, they just went through a whole report on our Social Security program here, and I don't think they're done yet, but they're starting to find thousands of dead people, thousands of people that don't live in the United States that are receiving benefits. That's great. It's indefensible. Look, you mentioned USAID. We spent $70,000 for a DEI musical over there in Ireland. I'm sorry. You think that somehow that's helping to us from a soft power to make us more, to make you guys less susceptible to?
Yeah, I think it was an event in the U.S. ambassador's residence, I think, in the
I don't
Phoenix
really care
Park.
Where it was, whether it was in Dublin, Shannon, Galway. I don't care. The point is that 20 cents of my U.S. tax dollars went to fund something that's absolutely ridiculous. And the bottom line is I want Elon Musk and Doge to go through every line in this budget to figure out what we're spending, and is it for the right reason? Is it the most?
Yeah, I know, but I guess the question I was asking, like the collateral damage when you slash USAID's budget are kind of poor people overseas to a degree, but the collateral damage when you get involved with Social Security. And look, nobody listening to the show would disagree. Nobody will disagree with you. It's mental that somebody is like, there's a 200-year-old person apparently living somewhere in the States collecting Social Security. Of course, that's nuts. But the collateral damage are actual US citizens.
Okay. So far what they've uncovered are dead people, foreigners collecting retirement benefits intended for US citizens. What's the concern that you have there?
Well, my concern is that when he gets involved, that there will be collateral damage, and US citizens, I wonder.
Your concern is nothing, but if he were to do something bad, okay. But right now, for decades,
no, I don't look. I don't have a concern. My question,
yes, you do.
My quest. No, I don't care what he does with the U.S. Social Security budget. My question is whether you looking at it think that's just, this is the question. Do you think it's a slightly trickier minefield to navigate when he gets involved with Social Security compared to overseas aid?
No. I think that when you are telling people that our Social Security benefits are being paid to dead people and to foreigners, they're equally outraged. This is money that was put into a system by U.S. taxpayers for U.S. taxpayer retirement. And so there should be outrage among every U.S. citizen that it's being misappropriated and misspent. And I don't care whether it's Social Security, the Department of Defense, the Department of Health and Human Services, every dollar that is spent by the U.S. government and sent by U.S. taxpayers should be spent effectively and efficiently for the cause that it was set out to. And the idea that people are criticizing Elon Musk instead of setting up a ticker tape parade and giving him a medal just shows you how backwards their priorities are.
Well, listen, before you go, I want to ask you one more question about Elon Musk, and it's whether you think that, because again, you've been inside the administration, the previous iteration, and you know what it's like. And I guess there's some suggestions that his time in this world may be limited, that Donald Trump eventually is going to grow resentful of those kind of Time magazine front covers of Elon Musk standing behind the Resolute desk. Might that happen?
Anything might happen, but I will tell you that people are ignoring the fact that right now Elon Musk is a heat shield. You think the Democrats and the people on the left are going after Trump? They're attacking Elon Musk for uncovering this waste, fraud, and abuse that many of them supported. So Trump, I think, probably loves the fact that Elon's taking the heat for him on this stuff from the Democrats and the left. I think as long as Elon keeps crushing it and hitting this out of the park, Donald Trump's going to be excited about it, because right now the base in this of Donald Trump politically is so excited about the work that Doge is doing and the leadership that Elon's exhibiting that Trump is reeling in all of the benefits of that politically. So it's just everyone in the media needs to take a breath and take it down a notch and realize that as much as you all hate Donald Trump and what's going on, that the reality is that this is actually a good thing. It's not a conservative thing. It's not a liberal thing. It's a common sense thing. Looking through a budget and finding waste, fraud, abuse, inefficiencies, duplicity is actually a smart thing. It's a common sense thing. It's things that every business does. And it helps actually make the programs more efficient and effective. And if people were to take Donald Trump's name off of this, I think everybody to a person would be applauding him. But because it's a Donald Trump-led initiative, they're against it.
Sean Spicer, always a pleasure. Sean, thanks a million for joining us.
You bet, Kieran.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.